get the view from the middle. He's the fine sports journalist for USA Today. Was in our neck of the woods for the Clemson coronation Monday. Find his work in the red section of the paper online, usatoday.com, on Twitter at George Schroeder. George, how are things in the Schroeder world?
Well, they're good. I'm sort of decompressing and trying to get rid of a little jet lag from coming back from the West Coast. But also about to be, at some point here, I'll realize college football season's over and I'm going to get depressed. But that's neither here nor there. Not there yet. It hasn't quite hit me that we're now into the long, dark winter.
Yeah, but with what you do, by the time that lag hits you, won't you be going to like a regional or something for March Madness? And that should cheer you up.
Seems like it. That's probably how it's going to go, yes. But right now, it's like no one has called me from the office today, and it was just like, all right. And I'm sure they're sick of me, probably, but it's just like, let's take a couple of days off and then reconfigure and figure out what we're going to do. And what a tremendous display by Clemson, though, in the national title game.
Yeah, you know, and obviously what you do, what I do, there's a lot of talk and a lot of buildup. You know, first of all, would fans travel? We saw ticket prices drop. And I know you've been to a bunch of these major events. How packed out was Levi Stadium? And would you say the atmosphere was kind of typical for a major event like that?
Yeah, look, I thought it was close to full. I don't know how many empty seats there were. There weren't a lot. There were certainly fewer than people suspected there or feared there could be. And I thought the atmosphere was really, really good until, I don't know, sometime in the third quarter when the crimson-colored outfit started melting away into the night and it was only orange-clad people, orange and purple, that were yelling. But I thought it was a really good atmosphere. You know, none of that means that it was a good place to hold the game.
Right.
I think it's an odd place. It's not a college football place. It's out there on the coast in a weird spot. In terms of the West Coast, I know it's not literally on the coast. It was, you know, it was 2,500 plus miles or whatever from each school, $1,100 plane tickets and things like that. I get why it was felt like a weird vibe going in. I just thought the vibe once they got there was pretty good.
Now, obviously, you and I have spoken over the last few months, and, you know, Alabama-Clemson, the least surprising thing ever. I actually picked Clemson to win, but...
Me too.
Yeah, that's right. But, George, there's a big difference between thinking they might steal one like they did with Renfrow 2 years ago and this. Did anything happen leading up to this game that you thought, the Tigers are going to crush them?
No, not crush them. But I do think that, in retrospect, if you look back at the Orange Bowl, even though Alabama was up 28-0 on Oklahoma, it became really clear. Once Oklahoma decided that, hey, we should start this game, it became clear that Alabama had some real defensive issues. And I think it's pretty instructive to see how relieved Nick Saban was after that game. Had Oklahoma gotten off to a better start, it was probably a 60-55 game. And I think you still make Alabama the probable winner. But I don't think Nick Saban was so sure. And I say all that to say that once they ran into somebody with an offense that's maybe not quite as good as Oklahoma's and not quite as good as Alabama's have been all season long, but was, you know, similarly explosive, but also brought the best defense in college football to the table, I think that there were some signs there that should have told us this team is going to give Alabama all sorts of trouble, and I'm not sure this Alabama team has what it takes. I didn't think they would win by four touchdowns. You're right. But during the season, I did kind of wonder to myself a little bit, is it possible that Clemson's better than Alabama? And there's so much that you can actually be ranked number two and be overshadowed. It felt like they were being overshadowed a little more than they should be.
Yeah, I thought what kind of convinced me our last show was I went back to last year's Bama team, and I looked at the secondary, and from Minkah Fitzpatrick, four guys ended up in the NFL. And,
right.
You know, I think after you saw Georgia, after you saw Oklahoma, is it logical to say that maybe that pass defense was masked a little bit by the strengths that Alabama actually had?
Well, there's no question. It's like the inverse of the typical Alabama team that we've seen. It used to be that their offense was pretty pedestrian and would just sort of grind away while the defense was, you know, smothering opponents, and then we'd come up with a couple of big plays and win the game. The offense would. this year, I think we all got boggled by how good the offense was and how different it was than anything we'd seen from Alabama. Don't get me wrong. It wasn't different than anything we'd seen at the top of college football.
Right.
We've seen Oklahoma have that kind of offense. We've seen, going back to the Oregon teams of years past have that kind of offense. We just hadn't seen that, and clearly from Clemson, too. We just hadn't seen that out of Alabama. And I think we got so excited by that offense that we thought to ourselves, wow, this might be the best team of the Nick Saban era. And as a matter of fact, it was one of the most pedestrian defenses of his era, and I think that got exposed. It's not just the secondary, although that was a giant problem. One of the things that was really interesting to me was the fact that Quinnen Williams is a one-man wrecking crew at nose guard, and they've got a couple other guys that can play. And by the way, Raekwon Davis, the fine defensive end, has decided to stay
right
for his senior season. That he's just put out a tweet to that effect that he's not going to jump early to the NFL, so that helps him. But their defensive front was not as good probably all the way along the front that it's usually been. And they had no depth there either, which meant those guys would get tired. And I actually thought the biggest crazy thing that happened during that game Monday night was to watch Alabama try to get pressure on Trevor Lawrence with four, just that front four, and fail time and time again against a Clemson offensive line that didn't go into the game thinking it was Oklahoma's offensive line or Alabama's offensive line or even Georgia's offensive line, and yet it turned out to be really, really good. I thought that was a big deal, too. I'll say one other thing, too. I think Alabama was outcoached on both sides of the football in that game, too, just flat outcoached.
Talking with George Schroeder of USA Today, and George, obviously there's a lot of emotions here, and in the immediate aftermath I heard things like changing the guard, is the dynasty dead, and of course with Tagovailoa coming back, a lot of the line, the receivers, the secondary is going to be older. Can we take a deep breath and understand with how they recruit, Alabama's not really going anywhere, and maybe the only surprise is if they're not right back here next year?
Yeah, no, I mean, Alabama's got every shot to win the sixth national title in Nick Saban's tenure next year. They probably aren't going to be ranked number one now. They're going to be ranked number two in the preseason, which means nothing.
Right.
But if anything that we've learned in those seasons that have ended in disappointment for them, which means that they somehow didn't win a national title, we've seen that the off seasons they've been incredibly motivated, and they've typically come back and been completely dialed in the next year. And when you're completely dialed in and you have all the talent they have, that typically means something. Now, I'm not saying they weren't dialed in this year, by the way. I think they were. I just think they had those flaws we talked about. I also think this. I think Nick Saban will see some things he wants to adjust. And I think whether it's maybe dialing back how the offense happens, maybe he'll control the ball a little bit more to help the defense out, or maybe there's some coaching staff changes or both. And then also they're going to bring back a ton of talent from defense, and they're going to add a few more people in there. And it wouldn't stun me if the defense is just flat better because they're older and continuing to bring in fresh infusions of talent, too. I think there's no question Alabama's not going anywhere. The thing I thought that was a revelation was this, where even when Clemson beat Alabama 2 years ago on the Deshaun Watson pass to Hunter Renfrow, and, of course, that followed the year before when they played a slam-bang game and lost to Alabama. Even in those two games, you never really thought Clemson was exactly Alabama's equal. I think, if anything, when you beat them by 28 and you just sort of crush them all over the field, it says Alabama's not necessarily going anywhere, but Clemson has more than arrived, and it might right now be the best program in college football.
No, that's a great point. I was thinking, last year, Tua came off the bench. He was a true freshman. But otherwise, even though some young guys, whether it be Cardale Jones, Deshaun Watson, they were sophomores, while Tebow made a contribution to the first title as a true freshman, he was actually the backup to Chris Leak. Could we possibly make enough? And I get he has a great cast around him. Trevor Lawrence being handed the reins and finishing like this is just spectacular.
Yeah, no, listen, so we now know why, even though we thought we know why, we now know why Dabo Swinney made the switch after the fourth game of the season from Kelly Bryant. Yep. Because Trevor Lawrence is spectacular. He's special, and he's only going to get better. And It's interesting. So I went on the Paul Feinbaum show, which is, you know, the big mouth of the South show, sometime last week, and they asked me what I thought about the game, and I said, look, the topic turns to the quarterbacks, and I said, look, Trevor Lawrence is not going to be the better quarterback in this game. And my intent was, but he's going to pass to a Tagovailoa at some point. Maybe by next season, he's going to be the better quarterback. Well, as it turns out, I was wrong. Not that he was going to surpass Tua, but that he had not already passed him. He's already better than Tua Tagovailoa, and he's only going to get better. And look, I know Tua had an uncharacteristically bad night. He's still terrific. He's still really good. He's still going to be a top draft pick, and he's going to maybe lead Alabama to a national title next year. Who knows? But Trevor Lawrence is a giant revelation. We have not seen a freshman quarterback like this maybe since going back to Peyton Manning.
Yep, that's the guy popped into my head, 94.
I think, and I really think that's the case. And he was that good, too, by the way. For those of you guys who have forgotten, he was that good as a freshman quarterback dissecting offenses. Well, Trevor Lawrence is the same. And I think Trevor Lawrence has the better tools, frankly, than Peyton Manning did in terms of the flat-out gun that he's got hanging off his right arm, or I guess that is his right arm, and then just his poise and his quick mind and making throws. I mean, just really, really something special.
No, he seems just completely unfazed by it all. Couple final thoughts for George Schroeder of USA Today. You wrote about my favorite subject, the four-team playoff, and what happens, shows like this, people start calling, they're on social media, they convince themselves that there might be a change. Accurate, based on what the playoff board committee chair Mark Keenum of Mississippi State says, they're really not even at the discussion phase as far as expansion.
Yeah, that's right. Listen, I'm kind of an 18 guy. I've kind of gradually come around to it. I'm okay with four. I think it's been fine. I don't like always how they go about the selection, and I think it's so subjective that that's a problem. And the reason I would like to go to eight at some point is because it takes some of the subjectivity out of there and allows some objective measurements, i.e. conference titles, to be in play. But there is no real momentum for that at all. And that tracks with the reporting that I'd done and several others had done on the national scene over the last few weeks. Even though there were other reports out there that, hey, there's some momentum for an 18 playoff, it does not appear to be the case. And so if you're an 18 guy like I am, don't get your hopes up. It's not around the corner. And the other thing is, too, the immediate thing that people have said to me several times when I've said just what I just said was, well, they're just saying that. We heard that when they were at the BCS, and then one day there was a playoff. And that's all true. But don't misunderstand. I'm not just listening to what Mark Keenum, the Mississippi State president, chairman of the board of managers, said. I'm not just listening to what the commissioners say on the record. I and several others, we're talking to a bunch of different people here. And some of them, if they wanted an 18 playoff, would be telling you something, at least on background or off the record, that they're not saying.
Huh.
And there's no momentum that anybody can sense. Because if there was momentum, you'd be reading stories that said, from a variety of people that would say, even though they're saying this, there's definitely something percolating under the surface, and that does not appear to be the case.
Awesome. Lastly, the conference here, the Pac-12, and like you wrote, the game was in your backyard, and the league was nowhere to be found. Whether it was what surfaced about the replay or the network still not available, certain systems. I mean, you quoted two conference quarterbacks, Brock Heward and Ryan Leaf, who said maybe it's a lack of passion. From the article you wrote, be it that, other factors, what issues have surfaced about why this conference seems to be losing ground, it seems not only on the field, but maybe in the wallet?
Well, I mean, look, I think the biggest problem is they're just not winning football games. That's the biggest thing. And obviously they're not very good in basketball either, which is a topic for another show.
But, right.
You know, some of this can be explained away by your marquee program being down. Let's just be honest. The perception of a league is built on its marquee programs. If your league has a bunch of parity, it could either be you've got some good programs or it could be a bunch of mediocrity, but we all just think it's mediocrity. The best case scenario for a league in a lot of ways is to have a dominant program or two who are good enough to be elite and get into the playoff, and then it doesn't really matter what the rest of the league is like. Now, I'm not saying that's the best for the fans of the league. I'm just saying if you're worried about the perception of the league, that's the deal. So if you could get USC to be really good again, or Oregon to be really good again, or, and I realize in saying USC or this next program is going to be a problem, or Washington to be really good again, and they've been the closest over the last few years, and obviously were in the playoff, then it changes the perception of the league. But you're right, and then you get back to the money thing, and in order to try to keep up with the Joneses around the country, at a certain point, you've got to have the resources to do it, and that's where the current TV deals and not getting anything out of the Pac-12 network in terms of revenue or exposure is a big deal. I don't think there's any easy answers because it becomes sort of a cyclical thing.
Right.
But somebody's got to win big. That's what they need. They need to win football games. Oregon needs to beat Auburn to start the next season at Jerry World in the 2019 season. You know, Washington needed to have beaten Auburn this year. You need to win those games. Somebody needs to be good enough to get to the playoff, and that will solve a lot of the issues.
No, it's when the blue bloods suffer, there seems to be a kind of all kind of encompassing problem like UCLA in basketball. But George, always look forward to it. Great stuff. Follow George on Twitter at George Schroeder, online usatoday.com. Have a great rest of the week decompressing, and we'll look to catch up next week.
All right. Hey, thank you.
All right. Take it easy, George.